So welcome one more time to our Fall Marriage Booster. So and most of you guys know me, but I'm Mike Myers. I'm the pastor of Family Life here at the church. And this is my lovely dance partner, my bride, my better half, Patricia, and who I've finagled into getting here to come up on stage, which is a big, big deal.
Actually, he didn't finagle anything. He just put my name out there and then came home and said, "You're speaking." I'm like, "Oh, that's nice."
Actually, I didn't even come home and tell her she was speaking. She saw it on the internet.
It's worse. So, we're going through marriage counseling now.
So we will have been married 25 years in January.
Yeah. Yes. But we actually have been dance partners for a little over 27 years or so, right? 28 years.
Something like that.
So some of you might know that I was an exchange student here several years back. And after my year was over, So when my year was over, I went back home. And shortly after that, Michael followed me there. So yes.
Intelligent, right, gentlemen? So 1992, right, my first trip to Brazil, a big experience for me. It was actually my first trip anywhere outside the United States, and so it was a lot for me to take in. So it was a new culture, a new language, the smells, the sights, the coffee, which is excellent, by the way, the barbecue, which is even better.
Yeah, and the dance.
And the dance.
Right, and so, of course, being Brazilian, in order for you to win my heart, you'd have to know how to dance. So
that's the rub. Therein lie the problem. Yeah. So yeah, so I didn't dance. Unless of course you count break dancing.
Which you don't.
Or like, you know, the goofy guy alone at the party dance, you know?
No. I'm talking samba.
Yes.
Samba, forró, you know, that kind of stuff.
Right. So yeah. So I didn't know how to dance, but she was super kind, she was super patient. And maybe she thought I was cute enough I was worth a try to teach. And so she decided to teach me how to dance. I would love to tell you that I was absolute natural, took to it, you know, right away. But I am a pastor here, and lying from the pulpit apparently is something that they frown upon.
It was less than perfect, but he worked hard, you know. He just really persisted. So
less than perfect. That's very generous. Very generous. So here's what I want to give to put the picture in your head. If you imagine, if you're as old as I am or older, think of a 1970s sci-fi TV show robot, okay? Or if you can't imagine that, think of a guy with cement shoes on, okay? That's pretty much what we were talking about at the time, which leads us actually to our metaphor for tonight, our theme for tonight, the dance. So what we found over 25 plus years of dancing together, both metaphorically and actually, is that when our desire is to improve, when we're willing to patiently and graciously, persistently work at it together, our dance can actually be something that brings us joy. And from time to time, it actually is something even, you know, that might be pleasant to observe. And I think it's something that brings our Heavenly Father a lot of joy to watch.
Yes, but as critical as desire and willingness are, it's just not enough. You know, you need a good instructor.
Yeah. So, yes, desire and willingness is important. Those are foundational, but obviously you can have all the desire and willingness in the world, but without good instruction, you're not going to get very far. My good friend Kevin Kennedy likes to say, he was an Air Force pilot, F-14-something mm-hmm. pilot. You know, all the willingness in the world to fly an F-14 is not going to get you anywhere without instruction. And gentlemen, I think you all would agree with me that our brides are far more intricate, far more complicated, complex, and wonderful than any F-14. Yes? I didn't say that, Stuart. I want to give you a couple caveats here. First of all, we are not up here because we're some kind of experts. I don't want to put that out there. Anybody that comes to you and says, "Oh yeah, we're an expert in marriage, this is our thing," you should doubt them from the get-go. And I also don't want to give you the idea that we think we've figured it all out, because we're still figuring things out. But we want to share with you guys tonight some sort of essential dance moves, so to speak, that I think have helped us and are continuing to help us to grow in the dance of marriage.
Yeah. And our hope is that in them, the Lord will lead you to some nuggets that might bless you.
Yeah. All right. So we've got seven essentials. Let's see if my, it's working. My clicker worked. So here's the first one. Know yourself. Romans 12:3. For through the grace given to me, I say to everyone among you not to think more highly of himself than he ought to think, but to think so as to have sound judgment, as God has allotted to each a measure of faith. I think this is a great place to start, because it's critical in marriage and really just in life in general for you to have a sort of a sober assessment of yourself, your bent, your talents, your gifts, but also your weaknesses and your blind spots.
Right, and I think it's important to point out that you should not use what you know about yourself as a crutch, right? That completely denies God's power to transform you. So instead of that, you should just allow that knowledge to help you capitalize on what God has given you, right? And give you some insight into the way you are and how you can change.
Right. So it's not, the idea of knowing yourself isn't so that you can say to your spouse, well, this is how I am, you just deal with it. Right? That's not the heart behind this.
So like
but rather,
Psalm, yeah, like ahead. Psalm 119, you know, it says, I've considered my ways and I turned my feet. So that's the idea of knowing yourself, is to just be able to turn in the direction that the Lord wants you to go.
And really, ultimately, I mean, if you're a follower of Jesus, what's more important than knowing yourself is knowing your identity in Christ. And then knowing, you know, what or who God intends to transform you into, like what his, who he wants you to become, so to speak. So practically speaking, right, get to know yourself, getting to know yourself in the dance. How do you do that? Well, I mean, you can start with personality profiles. There are scads of them out there. Take them all, right? Love language profile. Go ahead and take that. You know, if you, like I said, if you're a follower of Jesus, take a spiritual gifts profile. All of these things are going to begin to give you a good idea of how God has uniquely wired you, which is going to then help you in the way that you relate to your spouse. Another thing I might suggest if you attend Rest in Bible Church is we have a class called One Body, Many Parts in ETS, Equipping the Saints class, that dives in a lot to this subject. So that's another option for you there.
Yeah, and in all of those tests, if you have taken them years ago, take them again. God is transforming you, so the results might have changed a little bit. So have fun. Take them again and figure out where you are right now in your life.
Yeah, we had that. We took a marriage assessment or a premarital assessment 24 years into marriage, and just had a really good laugh because we changed how much we had changed as individuals and how much we had changed as a couple.
Back in the day, there would have been red flags all over the place.
Yeah.
Don't marry that guy.
Don't do it. So that's the first essential, right? It's very important for you to know yourself. The second one is you need to know your partner, right? Get a PhD in your spouse.
Right. So back to our metaphor, a good dance partner knows how to highlight their partner's strengths and backstop their weaknesses, right? So you want to bring out the best in your dance partner, in your partner. So you need to know them well. You need to know their personality type. You need to know their love language. Like knowing yourself, you also need to get to know your spouse and how they might have changed over the years as well. Life circumstances change, and that can change people. And again, God is constantly at work in you. So get to know your partner.
And not just their bent, not just their strengths, but also, I mean, a good understanding of what their weaknesses are as well. Guys, what is the man's, you know, purpose in the dance? Our purpose in the dance is really to bring out the best in our spouse. That's our goal, right? Is to put her beauty, if you think of the literal dance, the metaphor, the goal of the man in the dance is to put the beauty and the grace of his female dance partner on display, right? The guy is almost never the star in the dance. I don't know if you've never picked up on that. And it carries from the metaphor into into our marriages. Ephesians 5:25, right? Famous, very well-known passage on marriage in the Bible. And it's where the husbands are told to love their wife as Christ loved the church and laid down his life for her. And we all kind of have that one in our head, lay down your life, right? We think we understand what that means. But Paul goes on. Here's what he says in the remaining part of that passage. He says, so that he might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of water with the word, that he might present to himself the church, the bride, in all her glory, having no spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she would be holy and blameless. So the idea there that he's putting across is that he wants to bring as Christ as the groom, the church as the bride, he wants to bring out of his bride her beauty. He wants to make her everything that she was intended to be. And that, guys, is our purpose. So what does it look like? Sometimes a negative example is better, easier to understand. So what does it look like when you don't do that well? In one case for us, which I've shared in some context before, so you may have heard the story before, I went through the first half of our marriage thinking that I had married a pure extrovert, right? And that was fine, the first half of our marriage. And then we moved to Brazil to do ministry there. And while we were there, of course, it's a different culture, different situation. So we had people coming to our house all the time. Kids, street kids coming to our house, volunteers coming to our house, people from church coming to our house. It was just constant flow of people. And I'm an extrovert, and I thought that she was a pure extrovert. And so it didn't matter what time you showed up. We were having dinner. Come on in. We'll pull up a seat for you. You know, we're having family devotions. Come on in. We're watching TV. Come on in. It was always, the door was open all the time. What I didn't realize is that I was not married to a pure extrovert, and I found it out later that she's what we would call an extrovert introvert, which means that she loves the party, loves to be around people, but man, she needs her downtime to recharge. She needs to get away and needs to be alone. And I wasn't giving that to her because I didn't know my partner. I didn't know my dance partner well enough. And so rather than bringing out what was best in her, I was bringing out the worst. So guys, we don't want to do that. We want to know our partner.
It was not pretty. well,
you ready to move on?
Yes. Our number three here, know your part. Am I leading or am I following, right? So I have a very hard time not leading in the dance floor, right? The fact is, I think I'm a better dancer than he is. So yeah, I have been
not,
doing it longer.
That's not really a question. You are. Go ahead.
I have been doing it longer. So last year, Michael got for our anniversary some dance lessons. And I think within the first 10 minutes, the dance instructor must have told me about 10 different times to stop trying to lead. Right? Not because he's a better dancer, because he's not. But
you have to keep pointing that out.
I know. But it was just because the lead is his role, not mine. And the dance just doesn't look right any other way. Right?
Yeah. If I might take a second to brag on my bride a little bit here. And ladies, like you all, I'm sure, my wife is a pretty accomplished person. You know, she speaks multiple languages. She studied law. She graduated with a double major and a minor, and I barely graduated. You know, she worked at a law firm. She was the right hand to the mayor of a pretty big city in Brazil for a while. She raised three kids and a husband. You know, managed a very busy home and ministry. So she knows how to lead. She is a leader.
I'm liking this.
You are.
Go on. I think what he's trying to say is that not to lead, it's hard for me. And it's hard for us, right, ladies? I mean, we lead in so many different ways. We lead, you know, in different businesses, in school, at home, we're raising kids. I mean, we can lead, except that leading, in this case, is not a matter of ability. It's not a question of ability at all, right? It's a question of a role, and it's a God-given role in this dance of marriage that we're trying to talk about here.
So let me clarify what we're not talking about. We're not talking about like division of labor, like who does the dishes, washes the clothes, makes dinner, who fills up the car, the fuel in the car, who goes to work, who stays home, all those kinds of things. That is not at all what we're talking about. What we're talking about is roles like roles in a play. And maybe this will, hopefully this will, they'll make it a little bit clearer. If we go back to Ephesians 5, right, and we say, one of the things that we find out in Ephesians 5 is that our marriages, although they can bring us happiness, that's actually not the primary purpose of our marriages. I mean, that's just a nice fringe benefit. But what our marriages are really about is they are a living, breathing metaphor that's being lived out in the world. And the metaphor is of Christ, Jesus, the groom, and the church, the bride. Okay? And so central casting, God, the Father, has decided for his reasons that the man is in this play is going to play the role of Christ. And the wife is going to play the role of the church. Not because the man is inherently more Christ-like. This is not typecasting. Or that the wife was inherently more church-like. It's just the way that he decided to set it up. And I think when we think about our the way that our roles are assigned, and we think as husbands, and guys, I know I keep talking to the men here, but when we were talking about knowing your partner, and we talked about the man in the dance pair and what his role is to present his wife in the best possible light, to bring out her best, to help her be all that God created her to be, to cherish her, right? To cherish her beauty and her grace the way that Christ does with the church. That's our role. And I don't know how many of you guys have thought about your role as a husband in that way, but when you start to think about it that way, it really is transformational. It was for me. Because what it does is it doesn't leave any room for my own selfish desires. Because now my role is to bring out the best in her, to present her.
Right. And for the ladies, what's the wife's role? You know, what are we to do? So we are to help him lead. We are to encourage him to lead. We are to help him lead in our marriage, right? So if your guy is a little more laid back, right, he's a little more passive than that, you're just going to have to work harder at it. But you do have to encourage him to lead. Mike often talks about some questions that the guys are asking themselves internally, and I do hope that the guys will agree with this. And the questions are, am I strong? Am I able? Am I capable? Am I good at what I do? So if you want to encourage your husband, you're going to have to figure out a way to answer him in the affirmative to all those questions.
Can I interrupt you?
Sure.
Thank you. No, just because you mentioned the passive, you said laid back, then you said passive. So I want to just jump in there. So guys, if you feel like you fall in that category of a passive husband, laid back is one thing. Passive is something completely different. If you feel like you fall in that category, something needs to change. Okay? Passivity is sin, all right? And you need to figure out how... being a leader does not mean being bossy, being domineering, being tyrannical or any of those things. But passivity cannot be part of your life in marriage. It won't work in the dance. If you're to lead in this dance called marriage, you need to lay aside passivity and take an active role in what you're doing.
So ladies, our role is hard. It is challenging. But a good dancer doesn't trust herself to the strength, care, and leading of her partner. What do they say about
Ginger Rogers?
That she did all the same moves as Fred Astaire, except that backwards and in heels. Yeah. That's us.
Yeah.
Right? Sorry,
and
guys.
I agree with that.
We're just more capable.
Ladies, I missed that, and I'm glad. I didn't hear what you said. I was about to say something really nice, too. But seriously, wives, it's even more than that. It's definitely that we need you to encourage, to answer those questions for us that we're asking ourselves, to entrust yourself to our leadership. Nothing brings out leadership in a man than when his dance partner is entrusting herself to his care. But ladies, you are so much more than that. You are a source of wisdom a source of intuition that we just don't have on our own, of counsel, of comfort, of even courage. You know, I know Patricia, she sees things, and ladies, guys, you're going to agree with me here, she sees things on a plane or in a dimension that I don't even see. We'll be sitting having a conversation with someone, and she'll walk away, and she'll say, something's not right there. I'm like, what are you talking about? I didn't notice anything. And you know what? She's right. Something wasn't right there, and she picks up on it like that. I am better as a person with her than I am without her. And I think if I asked all you guys, I think you'd agree with me that you're better. Your bride makes you better.
Moving on.
Know your part. So know yourself, know your partner, know your part.
Know your part. Have a goal, right? Envision
yes.
a legacy. So Michael and I get to go to a lot of weddings, right? And I don't know about you guys, but my favorite part during the reception is when they do that married couples dance and they begin to eliminate by years of marriage, you know? And I just love to watch that older couple that has been married for 50 years, has weathered all the storms, and they're still dancing, right? I just love to watch that. I just love to watch a couple walking around, holding hands. And I say to Michael, I'm like, that's going to be us someday. You know, that's where I want to go. I want to be that last couple dancing 50 plus years.
Lord willing.
Yeah, Lord
so,
willing.
So, you know, and having, there's a practical side to having a goal, having a vision for what you want to, what you would like your marriage to be. I think having that vision of a legacy and a goal is going to help you to persist. It's going to help you to persevere. You know, Scripture tells us, do not grow weary in doing good, because you know that in due time you will reap the reward. So, you know, having that vision and then living in that direction is going to help you in the dance. So, practically speaking, how can we put that into action? I'm going to give you just two ideas. The first one is, you know, find a couple that you admire. Find a mentor couple. And I don't mean to put your hope in people, but if there's a couple out there and you go, you know what? I like the way they dance, right? There's some things about them that I would like to emulate. And figure out what those things are and, you know, make note of what they're doing and then live in that direction. Make that part of your dance. The second thing is to ask the people that are closest to you. So if you have kids, ask your kids. Or, you know, if you don't have kids, ask people that are the closest people to you. And think about this before you ask them. Think about what would I like them, if I were to ask them, describe our marriage. Tell me what you think of our marriage. What would you like for them to say? Not what would they say, but what would you like for them to say? And then write that down. Right, write that down, turn it into a sign, put it on family stationery, stick it on the walls, whatever you got to do, and then live in the direction of that. But have a vision for what is it that you want your marriage dance to look like. It's going to definitely help you in the long run to have that vision.
Very good. Number five.
Number five. We're moving along.
Yes, I'm checking the clock for you here.
Thank you. One of the other things that she's better at, keeping track of the clock.
So number five, cultivate
communication. Yes, I'll communicate. So, right, communication, very, very key in the dance. Right, if I want her, as we're dancing, a literal dance, if I want her to, if I want to spin her or turn her in a certain way, or if I'm going to spin or turn her, if she wants me to move or do something a certain way, we need to communicate that to each other. And if you were watching any of the videos, you know, of different dance partners and stuff like that, that were kind of rotating through what we were all coming in, those people don't look like they're communicating at all, right? They don't appear to be talking, and they're not. They're actually not communicating verbally, and dancers don't communicate verbally unless they're just starting out, right? With the old 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, and spin, and turn, right? But after a while, you don't do that anymore. But it doesn't mean that they're not communicating. There's lots of communication going on. There's a, you know, there's a touch of the back. There's a squeeze of the hand. There's a, you know, a raised eyebrow, a nod. There's all kinds of communication going on there. But the goal, really, in the dance is to be in sync, to be perfectly in sync with one another. But that kind of communication, that being in sync and knowing where the other person wants to go through those subtle communication, that takes a lot of time and experience.
But it is possible.
It is.
I mean, we don't start that way, right? When we are learning, we have to be intentional, we have to be attentive, and we have to be very clear as to where we want to go, what mm-hmm. we want to do. So seek first to understand and then to be understood, right? Give you an example with Michael. So Michael is a verbal processor and he's a dreamer, which is a bad combination when you're neither one of those, right? So we would be having a conversation, and one day we would be planning to be missionaries in Africa. And the very next day, he was trying to plan for a business in Italy. I'm like, which way are we going? You know, I'm like, you say we're going to be missionaries here, so I'm just planning for the missionary life, and then you just want to come up with this fancy business? I'm like, tell me which way to go. So early in our marriage, we just decided that so I wouldn't get frustrated and freaked out. He would start the conversation just by saying, this is just me dreaming.
This is just me dreaming.
Or I'm just thinking out loud. At which point I knew that I did not have to listen to what he was saying. I could just move on and do my own thing. So I just wrapped my thing. anyway.
Yes. Thank you for that. Did you drop your fidget thing there?
I did. I so do not like to be up here. I need to hold on to something to keep me entertained.
So what might be more common for you guys is actually the opposite. So like envision this scenario, all right? You know, ladies, you just had a knockdown drag out with one of the kids. He comes home, you very energetically and passionately lay out the whole situation to him, and he sits there and listens to you, and when you get to the end of your spiel, he gets up and goes up to his room and takes a shower, and right, or he goes to the garage without saying a word. And you go, what was that? Like, don't you care? Did you hear what I just said? This is horrible. Why aren't you upset about this? Ladies, you may be married to an internal processor. Consider that, right? It's not that he doesn't care. It's not that he's not concerned. It's just that he's not really sure what he thinks yet, right? So he needs some time to process it. So what could that look like in the early stages of the dance before you figure it out, right? Maybe she could, knowing her husband, say something like, sweetie, I know you're going to need some time to think about this, but here's what happened. Lay it out. And maybe could we plan to talk after dinner? So once you've had some time to think about it.
Right.
Right.
Or maybe he can say, whoa, that's a lot. I need time to think about that. We'll talk after dinner kind of thing. But you can't just release your dance partner onto the floor like that. We need to know where you want us to go, when you want us to spin. You know, you need to communicate so we're not just guessing and wondering and yeah, just feeling frustrated.
And, you know, you may get to the point where you don't need to, like, I don't need to tell her when I'm dreaming anymore. She knows, she can tell now through some other tells that I have most of the time that this is just verbal processing. I'm just talking and this doesn't mean anything, right? But I can't assume that. And I also can't remember back to the knowing yourself. I can't go in with the attitude of, hey, I'm an external process, internal process, whatever it is you are, you just deal with it. You need to adjust to me. That kind of attitude is not going to get you very far on the dance floor at all. So, are we ready to move on? So we had cultivating communication. This one's a big one. So, number six, practice makes better. We scratched out the perfect. It does make better, right? I don't know where you guys are. I don't know all of the couples here. I know a lot of you. But some of you might have had so much trouble in the dance of marriage up to this point that you've decided while you're still together, you're going to do most of your dancing separately. You know, maybe you're on the same dance floor, but you're doing the solo act. Or maybe you're in a phase of life where you've got young kids, and so you're running them here and there and everywhere all the time, and your whole life is poured into these kids and their activities and their, you know, their upbringing, their education, and everything else. And that, not by a conscious choice of yours, but that has separated you two on the dance floor.
Right. If you have been around us for any length of time, we have probably asked you, what is it that you like to do together for fun? Or, you know, what kind of things do you guys do together? And very often we just get this blank stares, like, I don't know, what do we do together? You know, what do we do for fun? And it's sad, I think, because some couples, they have just stopped dancing together. They're just doing solo dances on the same dance floor, yeah. Right?
And that's, I mean, that's, in the long haul, that's not sustainable. It's not healthy. We need to move towards each other. You know, essentials, the dance moves number 1 through 5 require a lot of time, quality time and quantity time. Do we run the risk of stomping on each other's toes when we're dancing? I would say it's probably more than just a risk. It's an absolute certainty you're going to stomp on each other's toes, but it's worth it. It's worth the risk. The reward is makes it very much worth it. You know, we have the name of the dance, so to speak, is Christ in the Church, right? And this is what we've signed up for, and it's going to require that we spend time doing it.
And it's an easy one to fix. If you do not know what you like to do together, yeah, go out on a date. Go out on a brainstorming date, you know, and write a list. What are the things that we like to do together? What are some of the things that we might like to do together? Just do not let another day go by without figuring out a way to get back onto the dance floor together.
Yeah, right? And it can be physical activities, outdoors, gardening, kayaking, board games, serving.
You can serve together.
Yeah, serving together. All of those things are going to begin to develop your intimacy together as a couple and help you in the dance in the long haul.
Very good.
So practice.
Number 7.
Practice. Number 7?
We're running out of time.
Oh my goodness, we're running out of time. Number 7, this is the last one, and it's so important. Embrace humility and humor. And I was looking this up because I was like, why is humility and humor? They start with the same 3 letters, and I figured it out. Google told me. Yeah, it's much smarter than me. It means of the earth, H-U-M. The root word means of the earth. And so I got this quote from a lady named Joy Clarkson. I thought it was great. Humor helps us be humble. It takes us out of ourselves and lets us see the peculiarities and pretense and hubris in being human. It reminds us that we are earthlings of the earth, contingent and vulnerable. And in our humility, there is room for hope and for redemption. And that's beautiful. See, she's a better dancer than I am, and I recognize that. That's not the only thing that she's better at. She is, she's better at logistics. She's better at accounting and finance. She's better at not procrastinating. She's better at matching clothes, you know, among about 1,000 other things. And humility is recognizing what those are.
Yeah, and, you know, Michael is everything that I'm not. He is the big picture guy. He is the poet. He is really good with his words, and I'm not, right? So he is an eternally optimistic guy. It's amazing. Nothing can ever go wrong. He just sees the bright side of everything. So, you know, people have said that he leads, and you don't even know that you're following. And I think that's true for me. You know, I do follow him, and I don't even realize that I'm following. So I think I wrote down here, humility is acknowledging your weak points, not overestimating your strengths, but also valuing your spouse's strengths and not emphasizing their weak areas. So it's just the opposite.
Yeah.
You know.
Philippians 2:2-3, I think is a great passage that speaks to this. It says, make my joy complete by being of the same mind, maintaining the same love, united in spirit, intent on one purpose, do nothing from selfish or empty conceit, but with humility of mind, regard one another as more important than yourselves. I always repeat that last part. With humility of mind, regard one another as more important than yourselves. I think if we did that, we would all have taken a huge step forward in the dance of marriage. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the other part of this is, like, don't take yourself so seriously. Learn how to laugh. You know, we've both had the experience, which is kind of unique. We've both experienced learning each other's culture and in each other's language. She went to my high school, and I lived in her town She lived in my hometown. I lived in her hometown. I learned her language. So the process of that, believe me, has provided ample ammunition for family comedy night. Okay, let me just tell you one. With a little bit of time we have left. The first time that we took our oldest, Michael, who was a baby, and we took him to Brazil to meet the family. And we get there, and the second we walk in the house, all of the ladies immediately swarm, right? The grandmas and the aunts and cousins and, you know, my mother-in-law, they all, and my father-in-law and I get kind of shoved to the side, right? And there's just like this tumult around the baby, like, oh, look at him, this is fantastic. And I lean over to my father-in-law and I say, it looks like a whole bunch of piranha. I know we have another Brazilian in the audience here tonight.
She's laughing already.
And my father-in-law says to me, excuse me? And I said, louder, piranhas, look at all the piranhas. Well, calling a group of ladies piranhas in Brazil is essentially calling them prostitutes. Oh!
That was not a good thing.
Oh, believe me, that's just one. I've got scads of them.
And I mess up with the language quite a bit. So I have a whole list of the
things.
My mother-in-law
idioms.
And I were fantastic because we just, you know, we just have a good time with this. But with me, in the middle of like a pretty heated argument,
yeah.
Which I don't even know what the argument was about now, mm-hmm. But I was upset with him. I just looked at him and I said, you know, it's always like this. When push comes to shovel, he started laughing. I'm like, what are you laughing about? I mean, this is serious. He's like, not shovel. So at home now, we only say when push comes to shovel. It's just...
inventing new idioms.
I have a whole bunch of those as well.
So, you know, I mean, we have to accept the fact that this dance is going to lead to the accumulation of a long blooper reel, right? Mm-hmm. And that's part of the fun, really, you know, if you can take that attitude of just being humble. So the message really is lighten up, you know, learn to laugh, learn to forgive easily. I think humor helps us to forgive easily, helps us to live more gently with each other. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, if you wrap everything, all the other six, and you wrap those up with humility and a sense of humor, I think you're on a good path to dancing well. What do you think?
There you go. Sounds good. I'll let you continue on.
You are?
Yeah.
Well.
Just so we can...
Oh.
It's almost 9 o'clock, so we can finish up.
Oh, no. You need to talk more. All right. So there is... So those are our seven essentials. But there's one key that I think really holds all the other ones together if you really want to get this straight. When we're dancing... And we watch people dance on the dance floor, right? We want the glory. We want to hit all the moves just right. You know, we want to do it perfect. And unfortunately, we don't, right? We fall short, both metaphorically, you know, and actually in our marriages. And, you know, Scripture tells us that that's going to happen, that that's the truth, right? Romans 3:23, everybody knows. All have sinned. All have fallen short of what? The glory. We've all fallen short of the glory. But there is a silver lining, right? If you read on in the New Testament, you go to Colossians 1:27, Paul's writing again, and he talks about this mystery, that there's this mystery. And the mystery is this, that when you put your faith in Jesus Christ as your Savior, that all of a sudden you have this hope. And the hope is brought about because you have Christ in you, and now you have a hope for what? For glory. Remember earlier, we fell short of the glory. Now, all of a sudden, with Christ in us, we have hope of attaining to that glory. So, if we as couples, as individuals, and as couples, with Christ in us, and as a dance pair, are abiding in Christ together and individually, there is hope for attaining to that glory on the dance floor.
Yeah. So God's not finished with us yet.
No.
He's not finished with you yet. And I, for one, am glad that we're going to be dancing a little bit longer.
Yes. So, aw. So we love to dance. I know not everybody here loves to dance. I would love to hear all the answers to the questions about what would you do if Mike asked you to dance tonight. The kitchen is one of our favorite places to dance. But really, the most fun dancing is when it's done in community, right? That's why people go to dance halls and places like that, because it's fun to dance with other people, right? You get to see some other people in some of their moves and what they're doing, and you know, you might want to try those moves out. When you get into a rut, you've got other people to help get your groove back. And again, so in our marriages, it's the same thing. Doing marriage with other people, with other couples in community, is the way that it was meant to be done, so that we can encourage one another, so that we can help each other get out of ruts when we're in ruts and get our groove back, so to speak. So I'm hopeful that tonight, and this is what I'd love for you guys, if you don't have that kind of community, that you would commit to finding that kind of community, and maybe tonight can be the way to start, the place mm-hmm. to start.
Yes. There is an envelope in the middle of the table there with the seven essentials printed on them for us to do our discussion and for you guys also to take it home as a reminder. So.
And I there's one more thing. In the beginning, I told you what a bad dancer I was, right? The robot. So I just wanted you to, Jason, can you cue up that song? Come here, please.
No.
Come on.
Marriage counseling.
Here it is.